From Studio 22, you're listening to Servcast with your hosts William Lamb and Tyler Shores. Servcast is dedicated to challenging those who have a desire to serve, lead, and make the world a better place through the love of Jesus Christ. And now, here's William and Tyler.
Welcome back to Servcast. My name's Tyler, and I'm joined by my friend and your host, William. William, how you doing today, man?
It's a great day, man.
It's a wonderful day, so I'm really excited about this show we have planned today. So what's kind of cool, like, we get to bring in some people that are really doing some really cool things with vocation and things with faith, and people that, in a lot of ways, from a distance, I mean, I really look up to. So I'm really excited about what's coming here later.
And our guest, Gabe Lyons, is one of those folks that I think a lot of people in the Christian community are looking to. Gabe is a trusted voice on change, and in particular, in the area of bringing together believers and non-believers sometimes for necessary conversations, and realizing that, you know, conversation is a key element of the gospel, and being able to understand where people are, it helps us to better, you know, maybe share the gospel in a way that relates to them and to who they are. Not that the gospel changes, but our approach to how we share that gospel might change.
Yeah, one of the things I've really appreciated about Gabe and the work that he does with Q is the way that they're not afraid of tough conversations. And of the tough conversations they're engaging in, honestly, in my opinion, they're the most well-rounded that I've seen. Oftentimes, when you get into some of these sticky situations that they address with Q, you have people that just kind of want to spout out their talking points and aren't really interested in hearing what people of a different perspective might have to say. But it seems to me, at least from looking at what they're doing, they really welcome these conversations, especially from people that may not agree with them completely. So I think that's really important, and I really appreciate that about what they're doing.
They do, and one of the things that I think Gabe stands for, represents, and challenges all of us to do, and that is to be informed, to understand what you're talking about. You know, to just say something because it's cliche, to say something because maybe, you know, you might have heard it or even read it in somebody's book, but you didn't experience it. It didn't set alive inside of you. Hey, you got to know your stuff in order to communicate.
Yeah, I mean, as an aspiring theologian, I'm all for people becoming more well-versed in what they believe, and not just what they believe, but the landscape of the societies and the culture that we engage. And that's something that's at the heart of Gabe's work. I'm really excited about this interview.
Exactly. So I think wherever you are listening to us today, tune in. We'll be right back with a conversation with Gabe Lyons. Gabe Lyons, founder of Q, with us live on Servcast. Welcome, Gabe. We're glad you're here.
Hey, great to be with you guys.
We enjoyed your time at Lee University recently in a chapel talk. And before we dig into some follow-up questions for the chapel talk, I got a question for you, and it's simple. Why did you and David Kinnaman write this book called Good Faith?
Well, to be honest with you, as we were engaging so much of the questions that many of us are asked as Christians in our culture today, we realized that a lot of Christians didn't feel confident that Christians really had good answers to the questions of our time, and especially as we're raising kids. I have teenagers. David had teenagers. We said we need to embark on a project that really helps a new generation understand how to think about how their faith applies to some of those big, difficult, and sometimes toxic conversations, whether it's about sexuality, life issues, economics, race, the difficult ones, because we believe Christians ought to be some of the most informed, thoughtful people engaging those. And our research was showing that a lot of people in the world today just literally have lost respect for Christians, don't think that the views that we hold are that helpful to society. In fact, they think we're harming society. They think we're pretty irrelevant. And then some are using the term extreme to describe Christian views. And so in that environment, we're finding a lot of people, especially younger people, college students, are starting to just be quiet. They're not talking out as much. They're not speaking up as much. And so we wanted to address that in a project that would help them both understand the context, but then again, know what to do, know what faithfulness looks like in the midst of that kind of an environment.
Good. And in your chapel talk recently, you gave us a biblical example of a person who lived this stuff out. His name was Daniel, and you know how he impacted other people, and honestly, the costs that were associated with his obedience. And then you encouraged all of us to be people of faith that would speak up in a culture of chaos. So my question then is, how do we help students that seem to be silent to speak up like Daniel did, knowing it's going to cost them something?
Well, I think the important point is that you don't speak up unless you're confident that the thing you're offering or you're saying is true, number one. And number two, that it really is helpful to another person. Anytime we don't feel that confidence, we just tend to be silent. Sometimes it's because we don't know how to articulate what we believe, so we believe it strongly, but we don't know how to say it. Other times it's we just literally don't know what to say. And so the way a student would have confidence is, number one, by understanding God's word, by understanding how God's approach to how human beings are designed, how we're meant to function, the ways in which God's made life to flourish for all of us. And when we understand those things, we actually have something to offer to our friends when they have questions, when they're in the middle of a crisis moment. And so the first thing is to get reacquainted with that, to really understand what we believe as Christians. But the second part of that is to be in relationships with people to such a degree that there's trust, there's the ability to have honest, real conversations, not just moments where we're kind of pontificating our thoughts or our opinions or kind of inserting them in places where people aren't really even asking or care, which I think sometimes we make that mistake. But when you put the investment on relationships and friendships, there's all kinds of moments that are just very natural that come up in life where the Christian will have the opportunity to express why they believe what they believe, how they actually think what they believe is truly good news, not bad news for the person that they're talking to. And in that way, I think students start to have a little more confidence. Of course, it takes practice. It takes trying this out a little bit. It takes maybe, you know, having some of these conversations with your fellow Christian brothers and sisters as you're trying to work through maybe what you think about something or how you might articulate it. But clearly, one of the calls of Christians is to be sharing our faith, to be sharing what we believe with others, because we actually believe it helps them. We actually believe practically, not only is it true and something that they should embrace, but we also believe it will really help their life. It'll be something that's good for them.
Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate how you've told us over the years, in our Q events that I've been to, and then in your books that you've written, and in our recent time we had you at Lee University, and you were adamant and focused on this idea that Christians need to quit being judgmental and harsh. It's really not who we should be. We're positing truth. We're sharing, the good news. And I agree with that. But I got a question for you around that with an example from chapel recently. Many believe that Christians, when they speak against societal pleasures, are considered to be extremist or exclusive. For example, you describe biblical and traditional marriage as a covenant relationship between a man and a woman. Yet we live in a growing gender dysphoria culture that often perceives Christians as judgmental when they speak against common culture or against the gay agenda, gay relationships. So how do we hold to our convictions and share the good news knowing it can be perceived as extreme and exclusive?
Well, I think you have to get comfortable again as Christians knowing that some of our views truly are countercultural, and they always have been. They've for the most part, culturally, not been in step with where the broader culture was going. I mean, we're kind of living in a new moment in American life where we've had this privilege, I guess, over the last couple hundred years of seeing that a lot of Christian views were just assumed by the majority of people. They were appreciated, they were respected, revered. People respected pastors and spiritual leaders, and that had become so common that all of us pretty much got used to that environment. But when you read through the New Testament, you see that's not typically what the experience has been of Christians.
Right.
Paul's writing the New Testament to a minority that's living under pretty much empire rule, and they're not a group that's well-received. They're not a group that people are respecting. They don't hold any political power. They're getting thrown in jail for years because of their beliefs. And so the first thing is we need to get comfortable with the fact that the church usually is kind of at odds with the culture, number one. That's historically what the pattern is. Number two, we need to be okay understanding that people in the culture might not understand or appreciate or respect the views that Christians have. So we need to lose the expectation that something's only true if the broader society affirms what we believe. And in a world right now that, there's a lot of desire for people to feel accepted, to be tolerated, to be affirmed, to get along with others, which is an important point in a pluralistic culture, to get along. But that doesn't mean you change your faith convictions to conform to the world. In fact, we're supposed to be renewing our minds so much so that we're transformed by the Word of God, and that's what's forming us. And so that would be the second thing I'd say. And then the third thing I would say is the way you articulate this does matter. It matters that we have compassion, that we understand that every single topic maybe that we are interested in addressing usually has a story behind it on the other side, that the person we're engaging with, there's a deep story of brokenness, of misplaced desires or pursuits. And when we can encounter people in relationship, then it actually provides a great covering for a multitude of things to be discussed that might actually not work really well if we were just communicating what we believed on Facebook or Twitter or social media. But it actually works when you're sitting across from somebody having a cup of coffee and actually listening to them and talking to them. And there's a way that our tone and posture really matters. God calls us to love our neighbors really well. And the preeminent virtue of the Christian faith is love. And I think that's one of the great opportunities that next generation has is they're so good at loving people, like just showing up in people's lives and saying, I'm for you, I'm with you. But one of the things we point out in our book, Good Faith, is that we find as younger people are very good at the love and leading with love, sometimes they fail to know what they actually believe about something. So in their pursuit of love, they don't know how to love somebody well because they actually don't know where leading them towards truth and flourishing really is and where they would find that. But sometimes the older generation, you know, we have to take responsibility for being really good at our beliefs and, like, really knowing what we believe, chapter and verse. We can point it out if you ask us a question about an issue. But we don't always know how to actually interpret that and communicate that in a loving way that allows the person to truly hear the good and the love that's within what it is that we're having a discussion about. So our hope is that people will kind of fine-tune these two things, lead mm-hmm. with love, not with fear. But secondly, know what you believe so that you have something to offer to people that really does bring hope and life and transformation. And then third, let's make sure our life actually lines up with what we're saying, that we're living out what it is that we're articulating to somebody so that there's actually a public witness that matches up with credibility to what we're calling people to. And so when you kind of fine-tune the love, the belief, and the living the same way you'd fine-tune a musical instrument or piano and get it perfectly in tune, that's the kind of posture and the kind of faith that we describe as good faith versus bad religion.
Mm. Good. So let's turn to a lighter question perhaps. You know, you're a dad, you're a father of teenagers. And in your chapel talk recently, you made this statement, conviction draws a line, determine in your heart the lines you will never cross. So how do you help your children, or how have you helped your children draw this line?
Well, I think it's a great question. I have a 16-year-old, 14-year-old, and 11-year-old. And a lot of what we've tried to do from early ages with our family, and you know, keep in mind, we lived in Manhattan, New York, for several years before now moving to the Nashville area. And in that season, we had so many opportunities to talk about conviction and the line. And when you're living life alongside neighbors who completely hold different viewpoints, teachers, principals, and other leaders in your children's life, it creates all kinds of great conversation about what's true, how do we know that. And so, you know, one thing we used a lot with our children from early ages that we now can refer back to is that we live in an upside-down world. What that means is essentially a lot of the things that are good for us sometimes in our culture are actually demeaned. They're made to look like they're not good for us or that they're not the most fun parts of the world or life or what we should be thinking about or living into. But then the reverse is true. The things that are bad are sometimes celebrated and made to look way more appealing than they actually are. And you could just look, you know, on a road trip at billboards to start to get an idea of how hard the world works to make some things look good that really aren't good for us. And so because we've had that foundation of conversation with our kids from early age, we now can refer back to that a lot. We also talk about this idea of design. What is God's design for you? What is his design for your friendships? That ultimately can lead to all kinds of conversations. What is his design for sexuality, right? Your mm-hmm. romantic relationships as you get older. What is his design for your relationship with the church? How has God designed things to function? And what we ultimately want to do as children is be in alignment with that design, because we know when we are, it actually leads to a really good life. It leads to truly the good life, which is what all our neighbors are pursuing. And we kind of have a secret code to that. It's called Scripture. It's called the Bible. It's called the wisdom over thousands of years of history of God being faithful. And so what we're trying to inculcate into the lives of our children is that they can trust God, that he is who he says he is, that his promises are true, that he's faithful, even when the broader culture doesn't get it, doesn't like it. But, you know, it's hard for children to have nuance. You know, that's the thing you learn as a parent is it's, you know, as you get older and mature, you realize, hey, okay, some of this stuff's a little grayer. It's hard to just be so clear on how I would say it at this moment versus how I should say it to this person or this friend. And so we've really tried to help our children also understand that a lot of the people in the world that they live in aren't believers. They haven't signed on to what we're trying to communicate them to them is true. And so I tell the story in our book, Good Faith, a couple of stories of this happening in our children's lives in New York City's public schools. One instance was just, you know, the friends, fifth grade, kids are cussing in class. My kid comes home and says to me, hey, you know, I don't do this, but it seems like everybody's doing that. And it's a perfect example to say, well, son, listen, a lot of the kids in your class, as they told you, they don't believe what we believe. They're not, their parents aren't telling them how to live a virtuous life in the way that we're trying to describe it to you. And so you're going to hear a lot of cussing. You're going to hear a lot of conversations that we would tell you at home. These are not good things to be involved in, not good things to be discussing, because it's actually better for your soul, better for your heart. Now, that's going to be hard to live out with peers who are pressuring you or conversations you just happen to be in and come up at lunch. But remember, don't judge them, because mm-hmm. that's the first thing you want to do is judge them as being really wrong and sinful. The fact is they just don't know a different way. And partly by you modeling a different way, you're going to expose them to a different way that they can be a kid, that they can hang out, that they can talk with their friends. That's one example of many that we try to share of how we can help our kids start to see what does it look like to live a countercultural life, but still show up and be good friends and good neighbors to those who might not agree with what we believe.
Mm-hmm. Man, that is great advice, Gabe. So let me ask you advice on one more. We just got a few minutes left on the episode today, but let me ask you advice on one more question. You ended your chapel talk yesterday by reminding us to be prepared and to be faithful to transform culture. You've given us some insights, and of course, you know, everybody needs to go buy this book because that's a great reader and a great way to start. But what are some other ways, some practical ways today that listeners can be better prepared to become agents of good faith? What are some quick steps that, you know, somebody's listening to us today that can say, man, I have no idea how to be better informed in culture and how to get to know more than I know theologically? What are some quick startup steps for people like that?
Well, I would basically plug some of the work we've been doing at Q, our organization, because it's been designed to really help Christians who want to be thoughtful, who want to understand the issues and the topics, engage well. And so we have a podcast just called Q Podcast on iTunes. And we basically essentially play a talk, 9 minutes, maybe 18-minute talk with some commentary around it that deals with a variety of issues. And for students and people listening who care about the culture we're in, it might be you're caring about politics right now. It might be that you mentioned earlier the topic of gender dysphoria and transgender, that conversation. Well, we have a podcast actually on that topic. We have a whole series called The Gay Conversations that bring 25 leaders together talking about same-sex attraction and the sexuality discussion that's happening in the church from a theological perspective all the way through to how do we engage in a public square that disagrees with us. At qideas.org, we have hundreds of talks online that you can search by topic that address so many of the concerns and areas that you might be thinking about. But fundamentally, you know, I would say that the first step is, number one, make sure you're rooted in community. This is something you can't engage in alone. And it's actually not as fun to engage in alone. Get a friend that cares about the culture, that cares about our calling as Christians to be disciples and responsible in our role to renew things, to be agents of God's kingdom here, and read a book together. I mean, that's where I began my journey. I had a book by Chuck Colson that a friend gave me called How Now Shall We Live. It was probably the biggest book I'd read at that time. I was 22 years old. It was like a 600-700-page book. And you know what we said? We said, let's get breakfast 5:30 in the morning at the Rexall Grill in Duluth, Georgia. And me and Brooke Whitmire sat down and had breakfast for an hour over were some fried eggs and some hash browns and a biscuit, and we talked about a chapter a week, you know, that we had read. And half the stuff we were reading, we didn't quite understand. We knew we weren't as smart as Chuck Colson. We sure didn't know how to articulate it the way he was telling these stories.
Mm-hmm.
But it gave us this place to actually talk about it, to engage it. And then finally, that actually, ultimately led to me deciding to go pursue the career I'm even in today, of trying to educate our generation to some of those same concepts. So I'm a big believer in being exposed to ideas, to learning together, but making sure it doesn't just stay in that kind of incubator, but that you actually have some ways to serve, to practice, to get out of your comfort zone, engage, test out some of these conversations, these ideas. Start with friends and family and those you actually have a trusted relationship with, and then just see where God and the Holy Spirit lead you as he calls you in all kinds of interesting places, because you've taken the time to be diligent in pursuing him, and in doing so, he rewards you. I think he blesses you, and I think he also creates opportunities to expand what he's trying to do in the world.
Good stuff. Gabe, man, we really appreciate you coming by our campus recently and taking time to chat with us today. And we're going to be at Q17 coming up in just a few weeks in Nashville. And so any listener that's hearing us today, can they still get a chance to come to Q this year?
Yeah, we still have a couple hundred seats available before it sells out. It's going to be in Nashville April 26th to 28th, and over 40 talks dealing with these very topics, but a group of leaders around that are just phenomenal to get to know. It'll be about 2,000 of us gathering, and we'd love for anybody to come. Our website's qideas.org/2017-2017, and they can learn all about it.
Great. Man, take care. Have a great day, okay?
All right. Thanks, man. Bye-bye.
We're back with ServCast following a fantastic conversation with Gabe Lyons. So really appreciate the way he engaged with us and even just talking about what he talked about in chapel. But in addition to that, his work with Q and some of the books that he's been able to write over the years.
One of the things that I was encouraged by listening to Gabe's talk in chapel, but also listening to the conversation or being part of the conversation that we had with Gabe, was that he's not challenged us to do something that he hasn't first experienced himself. Mm-hmm. He talked about early on in his Christian development, you know, in his own relationship with God, and then in his development as a leader in the Christian community, and he mentioned a book that he read by Chuck Colson, How Now Shall We Live? And what was important to Gabe was that that particular reading challenged him to be excellent and to be better and to, you know, make a difference when everybody he encounters. And I think that's what Q is providing for us. It's providing for us an opportunity to have a conversation with people different than us so that we can be salt and light and we can make impact in the community, because there are a lot of folks around us that need to hear the gospel, and I'm afraid sometimes we're missing it.
Yeah, and one thing he mentioned in the conversation that we just had was this balance between being compassionate and being loving and being caring, but also like being like knowing what you believe in and really sticking to that. And I think that's the heart of what we're trying to do here at the Leonard Center at Lee University. And so I really appreciate him advocating for us to really strike that tension. Honestly, is the best way I know how to describe it. So,
and for me personally, you know, I attended Q last year in Denver, and you'll get to go with us this year.
Dude, I cannot wait.
It's exciting.
I'm so excited.
We'll be there just in a few days. But the exciting thing is that I've seen part of that transformation in my life personally. One of my students, Eric Brown, who is a founder of Whiteboard IS and a friend of Gabe, clued me into this idea of Q many years ago, and I wasn't able to go then, but I did get a chance to go last year. And what I was challenged by personally is that even at my age, even when, you know, I'm deep in this thing we call faith and deep in this thing we call faith community, but man, I got a lot to learn. I have a lot of things that I can be better at and sharpen my craft in being able to share the gospel. And so when I talk about the power of Q to create safe place, if you will, for people to have conversations of faith, challenge me, because I grew up in a very traditional setting, very thankful for my heritage, most amazing parents, I'm better because of them, but also recognize that there were some areas in my life that I just wasn't willing to have conversations with other people on, mm-hmm. because I wasn't sure maybe where I was at in my knowledge base, but yet I was pretty certain they didn't agree with me, so I just avoided the conversation. And man, I've been personally challenged that there are conversations that I need to be willing to have You know, sometimes I need to be changed, you know, to be in the image of Christ, and other times God would use me to shed light, you know, in helping someone else to be changed, to be in the image of Christ. And so to avoid these moments, I think it will set you up for a train wreck. But to embrace these opportunities to say, you know what, the gospel is the gospel. I don't apologize for the gospel. I hold dear to it. But, man, my life needs to be an expression of the good news in a world in which I live, in a world of chaos in which I'm living today.
Yeah, well, you know, places like Lee University help prepare people for things. I mean, it certainly prepared me. One, it made me realize, because like you growing up in the conservative South, like I was like afraid of certain conversations. But, I mean, attending here has both encouraged me to engage in those conversations, but also equipped me to do so. But you know what else will do that is Q and the work of Gabe Lyons, and especially the work he's done with Dave Kinnaman. So I really want to encourage our listeners to check that out. So,
hey, thanks for listening on Surfcast. And as we tell you every time that we meet you here, you're made for more. And if you need a place to start to figure out how to get better, Faith Community is a place to do that. And in particular, Q. And hey, until next time, we appreciate you taking time to listen. And Gabe, thanks again for taking time to be on our episode and our podcast today.
Hey, thanks so much for joining us today on Servcast and engaging in this conversation with Gabe Lyons. You can check out Gabe's full chapel address in the show notes below. Just follow that link. And be sure to check out Gabe's books and especially the work that he's doing with Q. If you like this episode, be sure to rate and review us on iTunes. And if you'd like to engage in the conversation or if you have some ideas or tips for us, you can get those to us at servcast22. That's servcast22@gmail.com. Thanks so much. We'll see you next time on Servcast.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Servcast. The thoughts and opinions expressed on Servcast are those of William Lamb, Tyler Shores, their guest, and no one else. Until next time, this is Servcast, signing off from Studio 22.